Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Thursday, everybody. This is Lee coming at you from Lee and Keys Real Talk. My man Keys running a little late, but that's okay. You know, I'm with you, holding it down. Great weekend we had this weekend. Finally, some live sports. Last night, we had another live USC event. You know, I always had a feeling that the USC could be the first sport to actually go live, and they are. And actually, I was kind of worried, you know, about, you know, what will happen, you know, making sure, you know, all the necessary precautions were taken to make sure the fighters were taken care of, the staff was taken care of, and things like that. And come to find out that, and out of all the fights, I think they said 75 fight camps, only one fighter tested positive for the coronavirus, and that was Jacare Souza. And you know, so of course his fight with Uriah Hall was canceled, but the UFC did pay both of them. So you know, that's another good look. You know, so overall, I would give the UFC great reviews for this week because they came out, put on a good show, and they took the necessary precautions to make sure everybody was safe. I was kind of skeptical about Dana White because he really wasn't given this coronavirus, I felt, the necessary respect that it deserved. And I guess on the powers that be or people that he worked with, you know, enlightened him a little bit. But, you know, it's good to have live sports back. I was actually getting kind of desperate to the fact that I think I was going to start watching the South Korean baseball. But I just couldn't bring myself to do it because I can't say the players' names. I don't have any knowledge of the players, so I just couldn't see myself doing it. But it's just great. It's just great. Only knock I would have, if I just wish that the UFC would have put the show on for free. I think putting the show on for free, they would have got more eyes on the product. Even though a lot of people did buy it, I think they said 700,000. I don't know whether or not I believe that or not, but, you know, they said they had over 700,000 buys. So that's a good look for the UFC. And then the fun don't stop. There's another fight card Saturday. So, yeah, the UFC is pulling off three fight cards in a week. So, man, these are great times to be. This is a great time to be a UFC fan, a Mixed Martial Arts fan. We get three fight cards in a week. Y'all, what's up, Keys? How goes it, bro?
Pretty good, man. How you doing?
Oh, man, I'm just hanging in there.
So, how do you feel about Anthony Smith? What happened with Anthony Smith, man? Glover, in my opinion, either Glover had a really good night or Anthony Smith had a really bad night, or both. Because Glover was piecing him up.
This one is kind of hard because Anthony Smith came out and had a good first round. And then it just went downhill at some point in the fight, and it just seemed like he just wasn't there. But, you know, as things go, is sometimes you just got to give the guy that one credit. And I have to give Glover credit. Actually, yesterday when I was riding home, I was listening to the Luke Thomas show, and he was doing his predictions. He actually gave a stat that I never even thought of, that both Anthony Smith and Glover Teixeira
both get hit more than they hit the other fighter in their fights. And I was like, man, that's kind of crazy. Because normally, when you win, you normally give out more punishment than you take. And,
right.
Man, I was just, and I just think my man, Anthony Smith, I know that a lot of times fighters say they'd rather die instead of quit, or they corner throw in the towel. Last night was one of them nights that fight should have either been stopped by the ref, or his corner should have stopped that fight. And I say starting in the third round, I wouldn't have been mad if they stopped it in the third round. I definitely wouldn't have been mad if he didn't come out for the fifth round. But it was just like, sometimes you got to protect the fighter against themselves. And last night was a perfect example of that.
And the crazy thing is that when Anthony Smith said to his corner, and you could hear it, that's why I like how now there's no fans at the events. And I'm totally okay with these very quiet UFC events because I feel like
I was going to ask you about that.
It's such well, there's the answer. I'm so much happier with these events with no fans because you can hear a lot more what's being said around the cage. You can hear a lot more what the commentary is saying, and you can actually understand it because it's not being drowned out by the crowd or any chants or the commentary is not getting distracted by the crowd. So they're more focused on the fight, and you can also hear what each fighter's corner is saying to the fighter and vice versa. And you can even hear, you know, at points you can hear what the fighters are saying to each other during the fight. You know, when it got some close ups with the camera. And one thing that they captured was Anthony Smith said to his corner, "My teeth are falling out." And you know what they said when they recorded it back? You know what someone in Anthony Smith's corner said to him? He said, "Just breathe." He said, "I need you to breathe."
Okay.
Man, what the hell kind of response is that?
Can I jump in real quick?
Yeah.
On that, if I was Anthony Smith, whoever said that, they would get fired. Because at that time, that's when you are supposed to protect your fighter. The fighter is the asset. Go ahead, Keys.
Yeah, because and somebody from the commentary made a good point. They said they thought that at that moment, when Anthony Smith said, "My teeth are falling out," when he went back to his corner, I think that was after the fourth round, he said, "My teeth are falling out." Someone in the commentary speculated that Smith is too much of a warrior. I mean, his nickname is Lionheart. A lot of these fighters have kind of random nicknames that we don't really know why. He lives up to his name, and he's the kind of guy that he's not going to tell his corner to throw in the towel that he can't fight. That's just not the kind of guy Anthony Smith is. Even if it's for his own good that they stop the fight, he's not going to do that himself. So, but it was his corner's job at that time, like you said, to save him from himself. And when the corner is, they're trying to assess you to see if you're still in the fight, and especially with the way he was getting pounded, you should have looked at him, and when he said, "My teeth are falling out," you should have took that as him saying, "You guys stop the fight." Like, I feel like he was trying to let them know they should stop the fight. He probably didn't want to say it, but he knew it inside that he was out. He was out of the fight. He shouldn't have been in it. He knew he shouldn't have been in it. But with his warrior spirit, of course he wants to keep fighting. But if he tell you your teeth are falling out, you should have, his corner should have took that as him trying to say, "Get me out of here."
And then, did you hear the audio when Glover was like apologizing to him while he was whooping his ass? Like, "Anthony, I'm sorry, man, but it is what it is." Yeah, man, I was like, damn, dog. See, I know me personally, I'm a competitor. Me and I raise my kids to be competitors. Like, when we be playing Uno and Phase 10 and stuff like that, you ought to see us going at it. You wouldn't think that we were family the way we compete against each other. But I always told my kids, I was like, if you're gonna play something, if you're gonna train for something, if you're gonna practice for something, go out there and win. Give it your best. That way, when it's all said and done, as long as you gave it your best, you can walk with your head up high and you can be proud of your performance. If somebody beat you, they just beat you. I mean, you ain't gonna win everything all the time. But it's just like, man, with these fighters, dog, your corner have to protect you, bro. And last night, when I was watching that, it got to a point where I was just ready to turn it off because I was like, man, how much can Anthony take, bro? And then when he came off of the fifth, and I could hear the DC voice when he was calling, he was like, man, this should be over. You know, stop the fight. And it was just like the ref, and you could tell the ref really didn't think he was going to come out to start the fifth. But how much of that do we think this fight is going to take off his career, man? Because a beating like that, it weighs on you, man. Look at all the wars Max been in, Max Holloway been in. And when he fought Volkanovski and Poirier, you just didn't see him being Max Holloway because of all the shots and all the punishment he has taken, man. So I just hope Anthony Smith and his corner, when they watch the fight, that they make real objective criticisms of themselves because they did Anthony a disservice last night.
Yeah, that was horrible. His corner should feel ashamed of themselves, in my opinion. That was horrible. And
because there was another fight that me and you was watching, and the female, she went to her corner, and she wanted, you could tell she didn't want to go back out there, and they sent her back out there, and she ended up getting bombarded again and beat up real bad. And we were sitting there like, yo, she basically told y'all she don't want to fight no more. And basically they did the same thing his corner did. They was like, just go back out there and try this and this. When she's sitting there telling you that she don't want to fight no more. I want to say she was fighting Joanna. It may have been somebody Joanna was fighting. And we were sitting there watching it, and I was like, man, come on, man. I'm sending that girl back out there. They sent her back out there.
You think it? That sounds like what happened with Pennington and Nunes. You talking about Pennington?
That's what it was. Pennington. Her corner.
Yeah, because
she was like, nah, you could tell she was done. And they sent her back out there. And I know that next show, me and you got up here, and we ripped her coaches for sending her back out there.
Yeah, that was a really similar situation. I mean, I don't even really think Ferguson, I mean, and we're going to have to get to Ferguson. I mean, I just brought it up, so now we have to get to it. But I feel the same way about Ferguson. I think Ferguson's corner did him a disservice. I don't even know what his corner was talking about at UFC 249. Who over there was saying, you could hear the commentary, like, reading back what Ferguson's corner was saying to him. They were telling him to do Imanari rolls. I don't even really know what that is, but was his corner even thinking about that entire fight? Did they even put any thought into how to go about that fight? Because I don't understand. All I saw was Ferguson getting pieced up to death by Gaethje, and he's still standing in front of him, still coming forward and taking more shots. I don't really understand. Was there any thought of maybe shooting for a takedown on Gaethje, or I don't know, going for a submission or any kind of groundwork? Was anybody thinking about these things, or we're just going to keep going with the same game plan every round? Because that's what it looked like. Ferguson, keep going, same game plan. That's not working for five rounds. He didn't win a single round of the fight. He lost all five rounds. And then he got TKO'd in the fifth round. And he probably shouldn't have even been in there for the fifth round because he was already beat up so bad. He probably should have been out of there earlier than that, probably the fourth round.
Yeah, he shouldn't have came out in the fifth. Actually, I think at the end of the third round, I thought he was done at the end of the third round. But, you know, Tony is just one of them guys that, you know, you got to give him a chance to see whether or not he can pull it out. But I think at the end of the fourth round, when you knew he couldn't pull it out, ain't no need to send him back out there. But another thing that I think that may have hurt Tony is what you said, and we was talking about the Anthony Smith and Glover fight. Is I think Tony is a guy that feeds off the crowd. I think having no crowd really hurt him as far as this fight is concerned. Because when you look at all his, you know, all his last couple fights, is he has really fed off the energy of the crowd. And I think that may have played a part in his decision. But I think his coaching let him down once again. Because at the end of the first round, you could tell Gaethje was on top of his game. Gaethje was on top of his game in the first round. And then in the second round, I mean, Tony caught him with that uppercut to end the second round. Still, he lost the second round. So my thing was, when they went back to the corner, what happened with, let's do some feints. Let's shoot for some takedowns. You know, let's switch things up. Let's get him on the mat and see what we can do on the mat. Now, that origami roll or whatever it is, that's a roll that that they use to try to roll the opponent into a leg lock or an ankle lock. So, you know, and it's kind of an unorthodox roll that you can actually take your opponent by surprise if you was to, you know, get the takedown with it, because normally you roll right into a possible submission on the leg. But to me, you should have did that in the second round. Why are we doing this in the fourth and fifth round? That was just dumb. In the third round, you should have been going for takedowns. You should have been trying to minimize Gaethje's striking and trying to make him carry Tony's weight, being that Gaethje really hadn't had a full camp like Tony. So it was just like, I don't get it, man. The coaching for Gaethje and Smith was really, really bad, man. It was really, really bad.
You mean Ferguson and Smith?
Ferguson and Smith, yeah.
But my thing is too is, you know, maybe it's time, maybe it's this, because another thing is, when do we see Smith gas in the second round? Like, I never saw Anthony Smith look so tired in the second round ever in his UFC career. Usually his cardio is excellent, and we also just saw him fight five rounds with John Jones, and we also apparently saw him fight four or five rounds with Gustafson. So, I don't understand. I didn't see either one of those fights, but I'm just going off what I heard, how the fights went.
Well, go ahead. I'm going to look it up now while we're talking.
Yeah, I think that the Gustafson-Smith was a fourth-round knockout. Smith caught Gustafson. And then apparently the John Jones fight went five rounds. I didn't see either one of those fights. I walked out of the bar after Woodley lost to Kamaru Usman, I walked out of Hooters. I wasn't watching the rest. I didn't care about Jones versus Smith after that. My guy got dominated, and I walked out pretty much with my head down, and I was done. So I didn't see Jones versus Smith, and I didn't care to look it up.
You right. That's a good point.
When do we know him to gas?
That's a great point, bro, because I never known Smith to gas. He normally gets stronger as the fight goes. That's a great point, bro.
Well, yeah, I don't know where he fell short with that. I guess another thing to think about with Smith too is that he could very well still be, he did just have like a, I don't know if you call it a home invasion, but, you know, he did have a burglar break into his house and he had like a pretty lengthy fight, apparently, from what I read in the reports with the burglar. I'm not saying that it's all I'm saying is that I think his mental state, you know, maybe he was, you know, in that whole event might have shook up his family, and maybe he really wasn't in a great space to be, you know, maybe he should have waited a little bit longer before he came back to the octagon, because he just didn't look like himself. His old fight style was weird. He kept dropping his hands down. I never see Smith drop his hands down like that. I don't really understand what was going on there. And I think that was I started noticing it in the third round. He was just like walking up towards Glover and with his hands down, and he looked like he was confident in doing it, but I don't really understand like what was the whole game plan is. What was the gain from doing that? I really don't know, because Glover was just piecing him up every time he put his hands down. I really don't. I mean, I guess his arms were tired, but I don't understand. When do his arms get tired that fast? I don't know. It was a very strange thing with that fight last night. I mean, Glover looked very good. He looked very good. So regardless of how Smith looked, that's not the focus. That is a focus, but we gotta be objective and just say Glover Teixeira had an excellent night. His fight was so good. You know, his one thing I noticed about Glover is his boxing looked a lot different. Like his movement, his upper body movement, you know, together with his boxing looked so sharp. Like, I don't understand where that came from. Like, I mean, I haven't seen that many Glover fights, to be honest. I haven't seen that many of his fights. So maybe I just don't know. I'm not familiar with how he strikes. But I never – his movement looked really good to me, his upper body movement. And it reminded me of the way Aldo tends to move his upper body, you know, when he's striking. The way he mixes his movement with his boxing, the way Aldo does it, when I was watching Glover move, I was thinking about the way Aldo does it, because it reminded me of the way Aldo moved, of Aldo's movement. So Glover's footwork and his upper body work with his boxing was just super sharp. You know, his whole and his head movement too. He was on it. I don't know where he was training his boxing for this camp, but or who he was training, you know, who he was sparring with for this camp, but he looked different to me.
I really don't want to say this, but I'm going to say it. I'm looking at Anthony Smith's record since he moved up to 205. And they fed him Rashad Evans. Then they fed him Mauricio Shogun Rua. So he was 2-0 at light heavyweight. And then he won by submission against Uzdemir. Then he lost to Jones. Then he beat Gustafson. And then he beat Teixeira. It seemed like the more his competition increased, his performance kind of went down. I remember the fight against Uzdemir. It was actually a closer fight than what people think. And John totally outperformed him. Yeah, he beat Gustafson. And now he loses to Glover Teixeira. Is it that he's not up to the level of the top guys in the division? Or was it a bad night? I'm going to go another way. I think Glover prepared and trained for this fight more than Smith probably trained for this fight. And it showed last night. Glover, outside of that first round, you could just tell that his game plan was, I'm going to keep punching this guy. I'm going to keep punching him, keep moving forward, and see what he does. See what Anthony Smith going to do to back me up or to make me change my game plan. And Smith never did anything. He never shot on him. He never faded on him. He never did anything to take Glover outside of his comfort zone. Glover is, he's up there in age. He definitely surprised me last night. If yesterday when we was gonna do our predictions, I was gonna predict Smith was gonna win, but I wasn't predicting it with a lot of confidence. Because it was just Glover is just one of them guys. He's like Andre Arlovsky to me. Andre Arlovsky wins when you at least expect him to win. Just like I thought he would lose last night, and he won last night. So I think Anthony Smith will bounce back. I think his next fight will probably be against Johnny Walker or Corey Anderson. I think a fight against Corey Anderson will probably put him back maybe a fight away from the – I think a loss to Corey Anderson, we'll start thinking that maybe he wasn't as good as he was advertised to be. So I think he'll probably stay away from the Corey Anderson fight, and I think he'll probably take the quote-unquote safer fight and fight Johnny Walker. I think Glover will probably fight Blachowicz because I think John is leaning towards fighting Reyes. But John also tweeted out that he wants a catchweight fight at 225 and he's looking for any takers. So we don't know what's going to happen, but Glover looked good and Anthony just didn't look like himself last night.
So you think Smith is going to take Johnny Walker?
Yeah.
Smith's going to take Johnny Walker and then Glover's going to take
Blachowicz. Yep.
Yeah, I like the Smith Johnny Walker fight. That's a very that's a good fight. We'll see what happens. I mean, the Blachowicz, I feel like Blachowicz is kind of already right there for a title shot. I wouldn't be surprised if Jones is already has a contract to fight Blachowicz, but I think a possibility could be that Jones already has a contract to fight Blachowicz, and what he's being offered for the fight, he just doesn't really – the fight probably doesn't intrigue him, because if you look at what he's been saying, all of a sudden he's switched narratives to this, I don't have anything more to prove at light heavyweight narrative, which he was not sporting that narrative before. Before he was just recently, you know, not too long ago, John Jones was just on the I've never been – you know, a guy that was planning to move up. Like, I don't need to go up to heavyweight to cement my legacy. I don't need to be, you know, a double champion. I'm very, you know, he had the whole, like, I'm content with fighting, you know, 205 narrative. And now it's, you know, he wants a big money fight and he wants to, you know, he doesn't have anything more to prove. And I think, you know, getting an offer for a fight and seeing the offer and not being happy with it could very much change a guy's tone into the tone that we hear John Jones in now, where he's saying that he has nothing left to prove. And I'm wondering if that is, you know, just an attempt, Jones, I wonder if that's an attempt of Jones trying to just fish out and, you know, fish around and see if there's a bigger fight that he could get to, you know, kind of show Dana White, you know, I want these bigger fights. I don't want these small contracts to fight. You know, maybe Jones is saying, I don't want to make, I don't know what he makes for his fights, but he probably didn't like the number. And now he wants a bigger number and trying to see if he could fish for a bigger fight because he doesn't want to fight Blachowicz or, yeah, I mean, I know he came out and said that if they want me to rematch Dominic Reyes, then Dana has to give me more money. He's not going to rematch Reyes for the same number that he fought him for the last time. Everybody wants this rematch. It's in such high demand. If they do the pay-per-view rematch with Jones and Reyes, it's going to sell a high number of pay-per-views. And Dana White knows that because the last fight was so – it was a good fight, and it was a controversial fight. A lot of people had different opinions on who won the fight, and a lot of people thought Jones lost the fight. So if you do a rematch, it's going to be huge. Look at how big the Gustafson rematch was. People were excited to see Jones rematch Gustafson. Why? Because they felt like he lost the first fight. Every time Jones rematches somebody, it's going to sell big. It's going to do big in the box office. And Dana White knows that, but he needs to stop paying Jones more to do these rematches. And we know, too, that every time Jones rematches, he dominates the guy. So on Jones' end, he knows that if he fights Reyes again, it's almost like he's going to see everything he's doing before he does it. And very likely, Jones completely and utterly dominates Reyes in the second fight. And that might not be, you know, when you're a guy who routinely does that and always dominates in the rematch, maybe you're not too intrigued to have any more rematches. Maybe you don't want to rematch guys. Maybe you want fresh talent. I don't know, like Francis Ngannou at heavyweight. Brand new challenge and big money.
Well, I'm looking at the payouts for UFC 249. And top of the list is Tony Ferguson at $500,000. Justin Gaethje at $350,000. Henry Cejudo at $350,000. Dominic Cruz at $300,000. Francis Ngannou at $260,000. Greg Hardy at $180,000. Anthony Pettis at $310,000. Donald Cerrone at $200,000, Olenek at $160,000, Verdome at $100,000, Carlos Esparza at $102,000, Vicente Luque at $180,000. Now, I'm going to give you these low numbers, Keith. The guy that fought Greg Hardy, I'm going to let you take a guess. How much you think he made?
The guy who fought Greg Hardy, I mean, I actually relatively know the number because I was already looking at the salaries, so it's hard for me to act like I don't have an idea. I remember seeing it. I want to say it was like a five-figure number.
He made $12,000. He made $12,000.
Yeah, that's horrible.
Cheryl Waterson made $60,000. Charles
and also,
Rosa made $24,000.
So, because I wanted to say something about the Waterson fight, too. I wanted to say something about the Waterson fight because I'm really starting to have an issue. No, so I'm starting to have an issue with these female fights. I feel like these female divisions are not even putting on good fights. You know, I was discussing this with somebody the other day, and I realized, first of all, in my opinion, that Waterson fight was a complete snooze. There was little to no action in the fight. I was disappointed with Michelle Waterson because I feel like she didn't really want to be in there. She just wanted to find a way to win but didn't actually want to fight. And I feel like that is starting to become a trend with a lot of these female divisions. Well, actually, all the female divisions. Besides for maybe five or six fighters of all those divisions that, you know, they consistently put on very good fights and they actually look like they want to be in there and they don't want to just, like, look pretty. I feel like Waterson in this one really just fought at distance and really didn't do anything to – she didn't do anything to, you know, really get herself up there on the scorecards. And – I'm just not a fan of that approach to the fight. I don't really understand, and I just don't like it. I don't like that these fighters they come in these female fights. They come in and it looks like they just want to look pretty. They don't want to actually fight, and I'm not really a fan of that. So I'm just gonna put that there. And I feel the same for Esparza too. I don't think she really was doing much, and I don't think either one of them really did anything to get themselves over on the scorecards. You know, there was actually a point during the event where the commentary, I'm pretty sure it was at the end of the first round. I'm pretty sure it was Joe Rogan. You know what he said? Someone asked him at the commentary booth. They said, "Oh, who do you think won that round?" You know what Joe Rogan said? He said, "I think it's debatable." He said, "I think it's debatable." The commentary during that fight sounded like they weren't even watching the fight. But I don't blame them, though, because what really was there to watch? I feel like there was really nothing happening in the fight. So there's certain moments where I get irritated when the judges, you can tell that they weren't watching the fight. But when the commentary is not watching the fight, I mean, I want them to be watching the fight too. But I feel like Joe Rogan said it's debatable because I don't even think he was paying attention during the first round. But I totally get it because that fight, what was really happening? What moment in that fight would have made somebody, besides just being a fan of those two fighters, what did they do in that fight that would have woke you up and said, oh, man, this fight is good? Was there any moment like that? Because I feel like the fight was a complete snooze.
Nah, man. Actually,
Lee, okay, please save face. Say something. Say something and save it. If there was something, just say it. Save face for these two. Because I don't see anything.
Actually, I totally agree with you. Because I'm a big fan of Michelle Waterson. I thought she was one of the women that was on the uptick. But to me, the women, they have to bring it to another level to keep men interested in their fights. Especially if your name is Chris Cyborg, Wiley Zhang, Bullet Shevchenko, Joanna, and Thug Rose, and Amanda Nunes. I think I said Amanda Nunes, but I'm just throwing it in there again.
The reason is that Wiley Zhang, but if you look at this, Wiley Zhang did not come into the sport, well, not the sport, but did not just come into the UFC and was already a name. She came in and put on good fights. And then now she's a fan favorite because she puts on good fights. I mean, obviously, she's one of the best fighters in the world. I mean, we saw her fight with Joanna. Obviously, she's one of the best fighters in the world. She looked unbelievable in that fight. That Joanna and Wiley Zhang fight, in my opinion, is literally, it might be the best fight of all time. That really might be the best UFC fight ever. And if it's not,
it's in the top five.
It's up there. If it's not the best fight ever in the UFC, it definitely competes with the other ones that you would say are the best fights ever. It definitely butts heads with the, you know, Robbie Lawler and what's his name there that went to Bellator? They had that crazy fight. McDonald, you know, Lawler and McDonald, the McGregor and Diaz 2 fight. You know, the fights like that come to mind. You think about just these crazy wars that Gaethje and Poirier, I feel like, had a crazy fight. Gaethje's had a lot of crazy fights, but these all-time fights, my point is, Wiley Zhang didn't just come in and she was already, people just liked watching her fight. They didn't know her through a hole in the wall. I still didn't know her through a hole in the wall when she fought Keisha Torres. But she looked good there, and she made a name for herself. But that's what these girls don't do. I feel like they don't put themselves out there, and they don't take chances enough in their fights to make themselves a fan favorite. Like, I don't really feel like Waterson has been a fan favorite up and down, but because in certain fights she puts herself out there and takes more chances. I'm not saying you have to leave your chin out in the air and get clipped and get knocked out, but that's not even always the case. I feel like they don't even come forward. Like, everyone just wants to fight at distance and point fight. Like, I don't understand, like, what – I mean, I guess she's a karate hottie, so if we're talking karate, then yes, it's a point fighting system, so that would make sense to point fight. You know, Wonder Boy does it too, but Wonder Boy also has a very vicious side of him. Look at Wonder Boy versus Vicente Luque. That was probably the most dangerous Wonder Boy we've seen in a long time. But it's those kind of fights, though, that bring the fans back onto you, and those are the kind of fights we want to see. And I feel like none of the women really put on those kinds of fights. Besides all those ones that you just named off, those are pretty much the only ones that put on, you know, fights that fans want to see. That Esparza and Waterson was a complete snooze. I rest my case.
And that was the point I was about to get to, was that when you're not a name, you have to go out there and make yourself a name. You can't go out there and fight tentatively and, you know, fight to win the scorecard. You know, you have to go out there and make the fight. You got to go out there. Sometimes you got to put yourself in harm's way, like you said. You got to take chances. And I just feel like a lot of these women, man, they just don't put themselves out there on the line like that. Like you'll see, let me pick somebody from this card from last night. Brian Kelleher and Hunter Azuri fight. That fight was a banger of a fight. Both guys went in there looking to knock the other guy head off his shoulders. There was no fake takedowns and, you know, take you down and lay on you. These guys were in there trying to take the other guy head off his shoulders, and it was an exciting fight all the way up to Kelleher knocking him out. And I just feel like some of the women don't go out there with reckless abandon to draw us in. And when I mean us, and I'm talking about men that are watching the fights. Women are watched because they happen to see women competing. But men, it's like if you don't keep our attention or give us something, well, we're saying, oh, shit, I got to watch this. It's like, nah, I'll go to the bathroom. I'll go, somebody might, if they smoke, they might go outside, have a cigarette. You know, it's just, I don't understand it, man. It's once you get past the top five or six women in the UFC, everybody else, you know, you like, damn, come on, give me something. I like the girl that you wrote about. I like watching her fight. She's one of the young girls that's actually going in there, putting it on the line every time she fight. I like her. But
who you talking about, Molly?
What's her name?
Talking about Molly McCann.
Is that the one you wrote the article about saying that she was in a fight to watch or something? And I think she's
I mean I wrote too. I mean yeah, I wrote you're right. I wrote an article. I mean I wrote a piece. I wrote like a piece of an article on Molly McCann. She's a female fighter in the UFC. I wrote another article about Valerie Lareda in Bellator. Lareda's only fought like two or three fights, so it's hard to really know what's her style yet. But I don't know. I'm not sure who I wrote about. And probably one of those two.
Yeah, it might have been McCann because I think she won her last fight by submission or knockout. And I think we was actually talking about it when we me and you was chatting during the fight. And I was like, damn, she's actually really good. But the women got to come out there and put on better performances, man. I mean, we're not sexist or being misogynist right now. We're just saying that the women don't go out there and put it on the line like the men do. Once you get past this top six or seven women in the UFC, it's like the other ones, would you really buy a pay-per-view to watch them fight?
But that's the thing, too, because we're not, and it's a good point that you say that. You say we're not sexist, and we are not. But and I think it actually, the argument that we're making is reverse sexist. It's actually the opposite because we're actually advocating for the women because what we're looking at it like, and I know that we're on the same page with this because me and you are both fans of many female fighters. We look forward to certain fights. Now, I've always been a fan of Tisha Torres. I enjoy watching her fights. You know, you've always liked to watch Michelle Waterson fights and so forth. And there's many cases, but the thing is that we know that they're capable of doing more. So in that respect, I feel like it's the opposite. So we're on the opposite side of the scale. If sexist is on the right side, I feel like we're on the left side because we know that they're capable of doing more. I just feel like they're hesitant to do more, and they tend to play it safe. And we want to see fighters at their full potential. You know what I mean? And I feel like any athlete you want to see at their full potential. if you're a fan of the athlete, you want to see them live up to what you know they, what you believe they can do. And I think for me and you, we believe a lot of, you know, we believe these female fighters in these divisions can do, could be doing so much more with their skills, but I think they just, they make a conscious decision not to. And you can see it in their fights because they look very hesitant. They look like they want to do, you know, the bare minimum just to stay up on the cards. And you never really see them taking a chance at any point. You never really see, you know, women throwing like any, you know, flash head kicks. You never see them really changing up their combos too much to try and, you know, disrupt the flow of their opponent or to try to change the pace of the fight rapidly. You never really see those kinds of moments happening. You know, like we said, besides the, those 5, 6, maybe 7 ones that we named off, you never really see that. It's very seldom in the rest of them because they just, I feel like they're capable of so much more. I think we're both saying that, but they just reluctant to just pull the trigger and take a chance in a fight.
And that brings me to this point. And Keys, you might disagree with me on this, but actually I think you might agree with me on this. People always talk about Holly Holm. People always say, well, Holly Holm always get, she always getting chances and opportunities and stuff like that. You know why? Because Holly Holm ain't scared to go out there and put it on the line. Holly Holm go out there and put on good fights. I mean, you might not like her style, but at least she engages. You know, she uses her boxing. You know, only thing Holly Holm miss in her game is she doesn't wrestle and she doesn't know how to get up off her back. But she puts on quality performances. You never come out of a Holly Holm fight saying, damn, boy, Holly really stunk it up this time. I can't remember the last time I said that. I thought she beat Jermaine Durandamy when they fought for the 145-pound belt. I thought she beat her. I thought she had a good performance against Cyborg. I thought if she would have did a little bit more in the fifth round, she may have would have stole the decision against Cyborg. Nunez is just on a different level. So what did I really expect out of Holly in that fight? I expected her to show up and be competitive, but who really has showed up and been competitive against Nunez? I mean, so except Shevchenko. So, me and Keys, only thing we asking, ladies, when you get in the octagon, you got to be willing to put it on the line. You got to be willing to take chances. And there is nothing wrong with putting on exciting fights. If your face might get cut up, you might be battered and bruised, but that's the chance that you take when you in this profession. We just need you all to put it out there on the line. You know, don't be scared to let your hands go. If you know you're losing in the third round, come out and go for it. That's all we asking as fans. That's all. I don't think that's too much to ask.
Yeah, and it's. I lost my train of thought there. No, that's how you get fighters see different contracts too. They end up seeing different contracts. You know, I don't know. You know, I'm not in the business like that. I don't know how like the management really works. But you know, I have played UFC 3, and I know that when I get knockouts and anyways. But for the contender series, you know, I'm not saying that this model is the only one, but just for example, when the boss, you know, my president, you know, my guy Dana White, when he goes and he's there for the contender series, which is not active right now, but hopefully we'll see it back soon. The contender series, you know, why do you think he awards contracts to guys that like get finishes? Like, did anybody ever wonder why that he's not giving contracts to these fighters that are winning decisions on the contender series? Or like, why he's, you know, why does it seem to be these, you know, flash knockouts, these creative, you know, fighters with, you know, body kicks and they do exciting things? Why do you think so? Because I feel like, and like I said, this is not the only model, but this is just my example because I agree with it, is that Dana White is looking for, and I think most, leaders in the MMA are looking for people who will be stars. They're looking for people who fans are going to want to watch. The people they're looking for fighters who are going to make people excited for their fight. They don't want to look for people who fans aren't going to get excited for. If you have a style they feel like isn't going to be appealing to fans, why would they want to? You know what I mean? It's like someone's not going to. You look for people who are going to be a success and who are fans are going to get excited to see. How can somebody get excited to see you if you're just point fighting and doing the bare minimum? Nobody likes anybody who's doing the bare minimum in life, not even just in fighting and anything. If you do the bare minimum, and if I was doing the bare minimum at my job, I would get fired. And I think most people would get fired because a lot of people, no one likes someone that just does the bare minimum. You got to go for more.
And the thing is that go for guys too. There are some men fighters out there that fight for decisions that aren't exciting. To me, Damian Maia comes to my mind. I just think if Damian Maia can't get you on the mat, he's super boring. He's a guy that really isn't appeasing to the eye watching on TV if he can't get a submission. And for what, like Key said, if you look at it, Sean O'Malley is a perfect example of what Keys is saying. Sean O'Malley was discovered in Dana White's the Contender Series, and people saw him fight in there, and Dana White gave him a contract because I think he knocked out everybody that he fought while he was on the Contender Series. And guess what? All those people followed him from the Contender Series all the way up to his UFC debut. And even when he was suspended, his fans were still like, free Sean O'Malley and stuff like that. And to a point where I think last night, somebody called him out last night. I can't remember who called him out, or I may have been half asleep or something, but I think he got called out last night. I know Marlon Vera wants to fight him, but that just goes to show you that if you put on exciting fights, the fans will clamor to you. And that's, as much as I don't really care for the guy, that's why Conor McGregor is one of the biggest draws in the game. He talks a good game. He goes in there and put on good performances. And then you just don't know what he's going to say out of his mouth. So in the UFC, you have to have charisma, skills, be able to talk, and you have to have an exciting style. If you had those four, you would be a mega star in the UFC, win or lose. Win or lose. When Conor McGregor lost to Khabib, people were still saying, Conor was rusty, la 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 la. Khabib just manhunted, la 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 la. But people still was on his bandwagon because he has those four things, win or lose.
And
although they prefer you to win.
Right. And off that, I think the first UFC Jacksonville card was a good success. In my opinion, I think it was. And I think you would agree. I feel like you agree that the first Jacksonville car was a success. And we're gonna get another one this Saturday. Yeah, go ahead.
I think the UFC is having a hell of a week, man. Going into Saturday, last Saturday, when I heard about Jacare Souza, I was really worried on whether or not they was going to cancel the card. But, they blazed ahead and put on a good fight card last Saturday. I was kind of skeptical of Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, because this Wednesday card really didn't have you know, it had some good fights on it. It had some names on it, fighting people that, you know, I really didn't know. So I was kind of skeptical of this card. And then especially saying that OSP was fighting at heavyweight for the first time against Rothwell, which actually was a good fight. But the UFC is having a hell of a week, man. Let's see what happens Saturday with my man Walt Harris coming back off of his tragedy going up against Overeem. I think I'm going to have to eat a little humble pie right now. I'm going to eat a little humble pie, Keys. Give me a minute. My man Keys has been really, really hyped a couple times about the UFC, saying they was going to have cards and then canceling them. Whereas I was the one saying that I felt like they shouldn't be fighting. But I was saying that because that was the human part of me speaking. The fan part of me did want to see live sports. Saturday, the fan part of me was 100% present Saturday. And I was happy to see fights. I was happy to hear Joe Rogan voice, John Anik's voice, Daniel Cormier. And even though there were no fans in there, hearing the leather smack and the ring of the bell, just little stuff, I was like, man, I was excited. Hearing Michael Buffer say, it's time. You know, it was great. The UFC, yes, they are first to be back live, but I always thought they could be first. But I'm just glad that they are first and they're doing it the right way. And for that, my hat's off to the UFC, and keep up the good work.
Now I have two things that are immediately on my mind at this time. I figure we'll do another episode between now and Saturday.
Yep.
Because we didn't get on until tonight, and I don't want to try to, you know, jam. So I figure we'll get on. Maybe we'll get on tomorrow night. Maybe we'll get on Saturday, you know, right before the fights. I'm thinking Saturday after, you know, once we know if everybody made weight. You know, we'll figure that out on Friday. I don't know what day they're doing the weigh-ins, but, you know, sometime between knowing when everybody made weight and before the fights, we'll get on for a pre-fight show. And, but right now, so there's two things immediately on my mind, and this, you know, I figure we're going to go a few minutes over with this. So for anybody listening, I'm just gonna throw these two things out there. So there's many things thrown in the air recently. There's been a lot of stuff on social media. You know, McGregor had a lot of things to say, you know, about Poirier. He had things to say about Gaethje. He had things to say about Khabib. He had things to say about Ferguson. Ferguson kind of responded to McGregor, and there's some things happening there. But, you know, we're going to talk about that another time. You know, the two things that I want to kind of teeter between these two things is I want to ask you about one of these two things, and I think you should just choose which one of these two things that you want to address. Now, one question is, who and what does Ferguson do next? Who, either A, you know, where does Tony Ferguson go from here? You know, 12-fight win streak, you just got broken by Justin Gaethje. So that one's in the air, you know, whether he takes time off or, you know, takes a fight in 6 months, you know. And then the other thing that I wanted to ask you about is I don't know if you saw it, but you may have saw it. There was also, between all the back and forth that I mentioned that's been on social media lately, this one I figured you would really be having something to say about, is John Jones and Francis Ngannou's back and forth on Twitter earlier today. Actually, that might have even been yesterday. It felt like it was earlier today. But which one of those two things would you want to dive into?
All right, address the Jones thing really quickly. Jones, he wants to have a catchweight fight at 225 before he moves up to heavyweight. So I think the John Jones and Ngannou thing is just all smoke right now. I think John wants to have a fight at maybe at 225 to see how his body responds, see how he performs at that weight. So I think that's all smoke. I think we'll probably get Ngannou versus DC before we get Ngannou versus John Jones. But to answer your first question, Tony Ferguson, I think Ferguson is still one fight away from fighting for the belt. The guy was on a 12-fight win streak. I still think he's in the title picture. But if I'm Tony Ferguson, I think now is the time to be selfish with your career. I go after the big money fight with Conor McGregor. I think that's a fight that people would clamor to see. You have two guys that are going to stand there and bang with each other, and you never know what Tony's going to do inside the octagon. If you tell me right now that I'm going to get Tony Ferguson versus Conor McGregor, I don't give a damn that we're going through a pandemic. I will have a fight party for that. I would have probably about 20 of my friends come over so we could watch that fight together. I know that me and Keys, we talk about the importance of your legacy, and your legacy should be winning a championship. Conor has won championships in two divisions. Ferguson was stripped of a championship that he had due to injury. I feel like that was bogus because it wasn't that he tore his ACL or LCL, you know, fucking around. He actually tore his knee up doing media work for the UFC. And how did the UFC repay him? They repaid him by stripping him of the belt and having Khabib fight Ian Kinter for the, not interim lightweight belt, but a lightweight belt. I think Ferguson should look at probably this point making money. I would look at fighting Conor if I was Ferguson. And if he beats Conor, then of course he's going to get a title shot. If he loses to Conor, what? He can fight Dustin Poirier. He can start fighting some other top five guys. I mean, regardless, he's still going to fight top five guys, and he still may be one fight away from fighting for the belt. So now is the time for Ferguson to look out for himself, in my opinion. Go for the big money fight and look out for you and your family. That's what I would do if I was advising Ferguson.
And I feel like that fight could be huge. If you would have, imagine you would have Ferguson McGregor, even if they like get it on back-to-back cards, if you would have both of those happen, I mean, I don't know, Ferguson might want to take some time off before he even gets, before we see him back. I don't know what the timeline would be. I mean, sometimes, I mean, Ferguson, we saw how quickly he came back after he got that, I think it was the knee surgery that he got. And Ferguson came back earlier than the timeline that the doctor had advised for him, and he came back and fought Pettis. So,
hey, Keith.
Yeah?
Real quick. If you get Conor versus Ferguson, you have to do that in front of a live crowd. You can't do that in an empty arena. That fight has to be in front of a live crowd. That's my last point.
Well, yeah, that's true. But it just looks like McGregor's pushing to fight in July.
Yeah.
And I know Ferguson probably not going to be on that kind of timeline where he just got pretty beat up and bloodied in versus Gaethje. I don't think he's going to fight. You know, I wouldn't think Ferguson's going to fight probably for another 3-4 months at least. Probably won't see Ferguson fight until the fall, late summer, early fall.
Yeah, he ain't fighting till the fourth quarter.
Yeah. And I think McGregor is pushing for a fight for the summer. So I would really like to see Ferguson McGregor. I mean, maybe that's one of the next two for McGregor, but I think McGregor is probably going to – I think he's going to – I mean, I saw it, it looked like he was even pushing for the Nate Diaz trilogy. So I feel like that might be, you know, and off in the horizon for Fight Island or for Jacksonville. I don't know where Fight Island is, so I'm just going to say Jacksonville for now because that's the location that we know about. But, yeah, you know, hopefully Ferguson can get back. I don't know. I try not to pay attention too much to the bravado that McGregor tends to, you know, kind of push around, because you've been right many times when you said before how he kind of just gets his fan base excited and then doesn't deliver.
I was just about to say that.
Yeah, you've been right on that many times, and I've even found myself explaining that to other fans at this point that you've said that to me, because it took me some time to realize that was going on. But so I try not to pay attention to too much of the bravado that he sells. But I wouldn't mind seeing him at some point this summer, you know, on Fight Island or wherever it might be. I don't know who the opponent would be, but you know, I would like to see Gaethje. You know, I was calling for him and Gaethje, you know, about 2 years ago. But Gaethje obviously is the interim champion now. So, I mean, I would like to see Khabib and Gaethje actually unify the belts. And I'd like to see the interim I'd like to see the fight, you know, that's meant for the interim champion actually take place and not, you know, get screwed around like Tony Ferguson did. He became the interim champion and then they just stripped him of the belt. So.
And you know the unification of the belt is going to happen because Khabib and Gaethje are managed by Ali. And Ali even came out and said earlier this week that when Conor was offered to fight Gaethje, he turned it down and took the Cerrone fight. He actually came out and said that this week on Twitter. And I want to say it was confirmed by Ariel Helwani or Brett Okamoto that that's what happened. So I think Ali is going to have his two guys fight for the belt and try to negotiate as much money as possible for them two guys to mate. Because right now, they both his clients. Why would he want to go out and make more money for Conor when he can make these two guys probably the biggest amount of money? Well, Khabib probably is going to make a lot of money anyway, but he probably can negotiate just as high as payday to date. So I just don't see Conor fighting Gaethje. I think his better bet is to hold out for a third or fourth quarter fight with Ferguson, or do the trilogy fight with Nate in July and then fight Ferguson in the fourth quarter, or see whether or not he could weasel his way in to a title fight in the fourth quarter if Gaethje so happens to beat Khabib, which I'm leaning towards, and we can talk about that later. But it's a lot of things out there that Conor can do. But the thing is I think he needs to start racking up wins, though, Keys. I think his bravado and his fan base are so used to him winning that he has to start stringing together some wins. I don't think he can go loss. Well, what, he lost to Khabib. He beat Cerrone. I don't think he can go win-loss. I think he has to go at least two or three fights winning and winning in convincing fashion so that it keeps his fans coming back. Even though I said win or lose, he's still going to be a draw. But when he's winning, he's even a bigger draw. Even though he's going to always be a draw, but when he's winning, you know, it's just his fan base is just ravenous. So I think he needs to string together a couple wins. But I think at this point, he can't just pick easy opponents no more. I think Nate would be the easiest guy he can fight right now. I don't think Ferguson would be an easy fight. I don't think Gaethje would be an easy fight. If he was to go up to middleweight, I don't think Usman would be an easy fight.
Welterweight.
Yeah, welterweight, I'm sorry. I don't think that would be an easy fight for him. If by some strange reason you was to pit the two biggest villains in UFC together in a fight, him and Colby Covington, I don't think that would be an easy fight. So he don't have any more easy fights except Nate. So if I was advising him, I would take the Nate fight in July and push the Ferguson fight back to the fourth quarter. Because at least that'll put him on a two-fight win streak. You agree or disagree?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, Nate Diaz seems to be – I mean, he commented on a post that Nate Diaz had. I forget what he said, but he what Diaz said. But McGregor commented and said, like, something about signing the contract. So I don't know if that fight is on the table already, and or if that was just a fake news statement. But I don't know. Yeah, Nate Diaz is probably a good move for him right now. I mean, I think he looked good at 170. I kind of like him at 170.
I kind of like it too.
Yeah, I think he looked better to me at 170. I don't think that Cerrone is this brittle fighter that people, and you know, is this battered and bruised, like, no chin fighter that people have made him out to seem. A lot of people like to basically shit on Cerrone nowadays because they feel like he's getting beat up by all these guys. But if you really take a look at the guys he's fighting, the last three guys he lost to, which actually Pettis, I think he beat Pettis. That's a conversation for another time. Yeah, I think Cerrone clearly beat Pettis. I don't even think it was really that close. I thought he ran off with the fight in the third round. I feel like he was landing the better shots, being that it was mainly a striking bout. But I thought Cerrone landed the better shots in the third round. I thought he beat Pettis. I thought that was a complete robbery. They really paid no respect to Cerrone, not giving him that decision. But, hey, what can you do? But the three guys he lost before that were all three top five lightweights. So to make him seem washed for losing to those three guys, I don't think is really a valid statement. Cerrone would still beat a lot of these guys that, you know, between 170 and 155. I think Cerrone looked great versus Pettis. So I really do think Cerrone's back, even though he lost to Pettis. I thought he won. So to me, he's still in it. So I like Cerrone at 170 and I like McGregor at 170. I thought they both looked good in both of their last fights. And, yeah, I think they would work out because the Diaz fight was already, you know, those two fights were already both 170 bouts anyways. So it's not like you'd have to change the format, you know. So that'd be a good scrap. And it's really, really know what other fight would be as big. So, but that, you know, we'll save that for the next show. We'll talk about that a little bit more. What fight might be good for McGregor at 170? I'll try to think about that between now and then. We'll get back to it. But this is a good show. You know, I enjoyed it. I don't even know what night it is. Oh, Thursday night show. I like the Thursday night vibe, too. Might have to get the Friday night vibe. Maybe we'll get it tomorrow. Or maybe it'll be the Saturday afternoon vibe. But either way, it's a vibe.
It's always a vibe. You know, we covered it out tonight. We talked about Anthony Smith lost the Glover to Teixeira. You know, we talked about UFC 249. We talked about the women's division and what they need to do to make their fights more entertaining. We just talked about what we think should happen with Tony Ferguson next. And we also talked about what we think will happen with Conor McGregor in the future. I think to piggyback on what Keith said, Donald Cerrone, I don't think he's washed, but I think he has to be more cognizant of letting his body heal and putting on good performances. That being said, Lee and Keys episode 141, signing off for the night. Keys, any last words, sir?
No, just enjoy, stay safe. Enjoy the, you know, the three UFC event week that is going to be capping off, you know, on Saturday. Definitely enjoy the fights and listen to our show. Listen to our pre-fight show. It's probably going to be either tomorrow or Saturday before the fights. I'm thinking I'm leaning towards Saturday before the fights, or maybe even during the prelims. I don't know. I'm leaning towards Saturday, though. So see it then, and listen to our show, and make sure you, you know, get, you know, eat your carbohydrates. You know, make sure you have, you know, all your different food groups, and yeah, we'll see you on the flip side. Enjoy. Have a good night. That's all I got.
Yeah, so like he said, we'll be coming at you either tomorrow night or Saturday afternoon. I don't know whether or not I'm going to have my grandkids tomorrow. So it doesn't matter either, or if they're here or they're not, you know, I'll still find a quiet space to do the show. But with that being said, everybody stay safe. Take care of yourself. Social distance. Wear your mask. I don't care if they're telling you you don't have to wear a mask. Wear your mask to protect yourself until this thing is at a minuscule rate. Our city has opened back up. I'm scared to death. Some places you have to wear a mask, some places you don't. But Lee is wearing his every time he steps outside his door. And with that being said, everybody have a good night. Stay safe. Take care of yourself. Lee and Keys, episode 141, signing off.